Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and we're joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. You didn't have such a great week this week, is that right?
I got to admit, it was a bit of a struggle to front up for this show. Probably a reverse of last week's situation. Yeah, I didn't even hit 1900 mark, so a horror round. I'm looking forward to Dangerfield being back in the team. I had Tom Mitchell. I brought him in, put him as captain, and he was on 82 at halftime. Oh, wow. And then he finished with, and he had 27 touches at halftime as well. So, yeah, just things didn't work out particularly well. I had multiple players in the 30s. Joe Danaher was poor. Fantasia was poor. I had Lloyd Meek on field. He was obviously poor. Yeah, Walsh, 89. Taranto, 90. Cripps, 99. Zorko, 70. The team just looked exceptionally average this week. So I'm hoping for a turnaround. I've not lost faith in a lot of those guys, but I felt like I was swinging a little bit light without a CJ Impey type anyway, and they continue to pump out huge scores. So they explain a big difference behind why I'm lagging so much behind the community together with the Dangerfield factor. So I think that's the story of the round for me. Did you do a bit better, mate?
Didn't have a great round. 1990. My season rank dropped just outside the top 10K to 13,000. I felt like I had a pretty bad week, so pretty happy not to move too much in the ranks. Still feel like I can make a pretty decent run from here. Also, I have 27 trades left, so I think that's more than most people. And I did a last minute Cozzy to Chapman, which worked out very well. Bad week, but happy enough with where things are going. I had a lot of those pretty crappy scores on field as well, mate. Meek and Danaher.
Cozzy to Chapman late was a good move. A few people asking about whether or not a week late on him, whether or not he's still an attractive option. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Before we do, quick plug for our Patreon. We record bonus content at the end of each show. So if you want to sign up for bonus content, make sure you jump on that. We also give out $200 to the leader of our Patreon group at the end of the season. And this week's top scorer is Daniels Moore Midtime, who scored 22.37, which is particularly good in a low round, pushing him up into the top 1,000. So big week for Daniel. Overall, the leader for our group is still Zach's team, Patton's Generals. He scored 21.86 and is sitting 215th. Good to hear that there are some people who have reached top 1,000 heights, Mark. We're obviously attempting to get there ASAP.
All right. A little bit closer than you.
Thanks, bud. So for this week's show, we're going to discuss some injuries. Butters, unfortunately, went down after looking. He was on like 100 points at halftime. Oh, just heartbreaking for owners. Heaney with a broken hand. Caleb Daniels been suspended for one round off a 20. And then we're going to talk about some rookies. So obviously Chapman is somebody that we can reference quickly, but we've also got Lockie Jones who debuted on the weekend and looked fantastic for Port Adelaide. Whether or not he keeps his spot is one thing, but geez, for first gamer, the boy is big and he played well. And then Alec Waterman, the 102K forward for Essendon, who's on the bubble this week. So a bit to get through this week, Mark, and we'll start off with the injuries as we tend to do. The first question is from Twitter from a user called Darcy Allen. Hey, boys, is the picture any clearer for you on the top six forwards? Looking for a Butters replacement? I mean, I guess related to the Butters question is probably the Heaney question. We can probably tackle it together. Trade options for Heaney. They're reasonably similar price points. So I guess some options for in and around that price point versus if you had a little bit more and wanted to go for the top six candidates. I suppose starting off with the top six, Mark, the ones that I think we've talked about previously, Zorko, Dangerfield, Martin, Dunkley. Probably the guys that we maybe gravitated toward a little bit more. Zorko hasn't probably kept up his end of the bargain so far. And then Rowan Marshall, Steel Sidebottom. These were the sort of candidates we were looking at. Have you firmed at all on your top six position? Who would you give that ranking to at this stage of the season?
Yeah, I think it's really tricky, to be honest. I tried to look for, I've got potentially a forward trade this week coming up as well, and I tried to look through the options and they are very, very slim on the ground. I'm not sure who makes it outside of Danger, Martin, Dunkley. Those three seem locked. The rest, it's really, really tricky to find who's going to be in that top six. Very tricky week to trade. There's probably someone in that group that is going to turn it around and become a really good trade in. Zorko, even he hasn't really looked up to what you would expect so far. Toby Green's looked awesome, but relying really heavily on goals, hasn't got that midfield role that you'd really like to see. Tomahawk hasn't been killing it, but he has come home really strongly in the last few years. Steele's someone that I'll probably end up in my side just because he's going to end up quite a lot cheaper. But he's only averaging 72, interrupted preseason, didn't play at the start of the year. And Rowan Marshall, from what I understand, has hurt himself again. Yeah, I'm really not sure. I think it's really tricky. Have you got any idea?
Probably hasn't changed a heap for me just because the options that are averaging quite well at the moment, I don't really see them ending up in the top six by the end of the year. I think Chad Wingard, off two games, presents some potential value. He's averaging 108 from his first two games. I guess he could be a potential candidate. But you know, looking at the guys that are currently in that top six bracket, it is really quite thin, which makes me go back to most of the mid-forwards who are getting time on the wing. So yeah, Steele Sidebottom, Dustin Martin, Josh Dunkley, Dane Zorko, Patrick Dangerfield, and probably Butters before going down with the injury was like next most likely. I'd looked at Toby Green. I like the element of the captaincy on him. I've picked Green in the past when the bar was slightly lower for forwards. So I think 95 is manageable, but he might struggle if GWS aren't as good a side to manage like 100 average. But the element of captaincy is interesting. Sometimes that makes players stand up. Toby Green looks like the type of player that might rise to that sort of occasion. Kicked 5 goals on the weekend, being named captain, and led the team really well to a victory over Collingwood that they were not favourites on. So that's probably one player that I'm looking at a little bit more closely. I've been to the well with Chad Wingard before, so I can see myself.
A lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, at 450, that's at least a price point where you're happier to take the risk. But again, I wouldn't be confident in him being a top six forward. So fairly similar analysis to you. It's a little bit of a struggle, but I guess that has me going back to the well a little bit in terms of the established players with previous scoring history.
Yeah, and I think you've really got to try and make an effort to target those top guys. So Dusty, Dunkley, Danger, and I've only got one of those guys in my side now. It's a really tricky week because, I mean, if you've got Butters, he had the 50-50 whatever the week before, so his price didn't go as crazy as you would expect after his awesome start to the year. Heaney is not worth the fortune either, so your options are a little bit limited, but I'd be targeting Dunkley or Danger if you could figure out a way. I guess the tricky bit is that none of these rookies are ready to really be culled either.
Yeah, and that's really a bit of a challenge. So you dumped Cozzy last week. You could, I guess, get 20K to top up here and there, but it's not going to help you a heap. I think Dusty's probably the main guy you'd want, who's the cheapest at 545. Steele's at 530, but on the way down. Zorko's probably the cheaper one, so he's at 495. What do you reckon about Zorko as a side swap? You said you had a little bit more doubts than him. Obviously, I have him in my team, so I'm still hopeful, but there'd be some bias there.
You'd think Brisbane would get a little bit better at some stage, and Zorko would benefit from that. Yeah, it's tricky picking a player that you haven't really seen what you were hoping so far. You've probably been watching him a bit closer than me. And I know that you've got just some hopes around him, but has there been anything concerning that you've seen?
Just things that we've seen in the past. So when he gets the ball, sometimes he butchers it and he gives away some free kicks, which probably hurt his points a little bit. So looking at his DT score, you would expect a bit more. But due to a little bit of bad luck, but I guess you can't call it entirely bad luck because he has had a pattern of that before. His Supercoach spores have been a little bit dented, but he's getting decent time up through the midfield. The fact that Reina has gone down earlier in the preseason has really meant that he continues to get the run in there. I guess McCluggage looks like he's gone into the middle a little bit more. So Zorko at times looks like he's a little bit more on the outside of the pack than maybe in previous years. But he's a good enough runner that he continues to get the link up play. And I think his running and presenting up across the ground does suit that sort of player that we were talking about previously, who seem to be thriving on the new rules. The guys that get enough space and separation to get a few chip kicks to help the team progress the ball up the ground. I think he at least seems to be around the ball enough. I'm pretty hopeful he's going to turn things around. I think 91, considering I haven't been happy with his first four games, is not the worst return. There are people who, when they're having bad games, you're probably getting a worse average than that. If you had to pick your top trade options for Heaney and Butters at below the price
point. It's really, really at below the price point. Yeah, it's tricky in below that price point. Zorko would have to be up there just because he's got the record. I hear what you're saying about Toby Green, and I love having Toby Green in my side. At 490, playing forward still. He's very, very risky. You may want to take that punt, but yeah, I think he's a very risky pick. I don't hate the Wingard idea. He's smack bang in that price point and has the history of decent scoring. I guess the issue with Wingard is durability. He always seems to get injured. And below that, there's not a lot there. You're going almost down to an impy type. And if you don't have Zeeble, maybe Zeeble. But yeah, you're really struggling if you're getting cheaper than that.
Let's go to the next question. This one's about another player who is missing this weekend, albeit for a shorter time. This question is from Rex, one of our patrons. The Magnets have been moving again. He's read that Bailey Dale has been moved to the back line to provide a rebound, and that played out in the kick-in stats across the weekend. And that has affected the player that we actually have a problem with, Caleb Daniel. He had a 66 and a 19 in the past 3 weeks. He hasn't gone this low in the past 2 years, as Rex's comment. Is that a role change or an injury concern? And then to top it all off, he's been offered a one-match suspension after the weekend's games. Now, very, very painful as an owner because he's already dropped a little bit in price. But it's one of those interesting conundrums where, as a non-owner, you probably still haven't seen enough to completely wipe him out of your calculations, especially knowing that he's going to be priced up cheaply pretty soon. And as an owner, you're wondering, do I let this rock drop or is there a rebound around the corner? So very tough trading premiums. What do you reckon about Caleb Daniel? Does the extra week missing put the nail in the coffin? Or I'm just conscious, like, it feels like this season has been typified by side swaps so far. And I don't know if that's a hangover from previous seasons, but everyone's tidying up everything, trying to get the perfect team. And I have a feeling we're going to get a few rounds in and people are going to be like, oh, I might not be able to complete my team. Because on the rookie front, I've still got Highmore and Cozzy and Brockman and Fullerton, like they're players that haven't quite gone up in price the way we would have liked them to either, which may cause compounding sort of cash generation issues.
I think after round one, people would be very confident in the rookies. I mean, you had people like Rowe scoring hundreds and you're like, oh, I can just sideswap my way because I've got money coming, like it's going to be easy. And then it's just settled and it hasn't quite been the same. I mean, remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, people were going way out of their way to bring in Jordan from Melbourne and he scored 24 on the weekend. The price generation from particularly the bench rookies. So the ones on ground haven't been too bad. The Gouldens and the Powers and Co have been making money. Campbell's been probably a bit disappointing, but you think he's got some good games in him. But the bench rookies have been really struggling. And as you said, some of them have been dropped. Highmore and Cozzy. I know that people have debated about the ruck situation. And realistically, I think that the main difference I saw in teams with people that took the rookie second ruck was that if you took the Gorn Grundy combo, you had a rookie on field in defense, and that has just worked out horribly so far, unless you got Chapman this week where that's maybe rectified a little bit. So yeah, long way around saying that the cash generation is really tricky. Back to Caleb Daniel. I think we all thought, on this podcast anyway, we thought at the start of the year that it would be unsustainable for so many Bulldogs premiums to score really well this year. And we thought that it would be one of the midfielders that would drop down. And so we probably had some more uncertainty around McRae, Bontempelli, Dunkley. But what seems to have happened so far is Daniel's been the one that's really dropped down in scoring from those Bulldogs premium. If I didn't have him, which I don't, at 400,000, if he gets that low, which is a good chance he will, there's a good chance that I'll bring him in at that price just because decent chance he'll turn it around. Not having the kick-ins, if that is a more permanent situation, that is a huge cost this season. We've seen that if you have the kick-ins, that's just a huge bonus to your scoring. Look at Ridley. Ridley's doing a lot of stuff outside of the kick-ins and played a great last quarter against the Swans where Hebel probably took more of the kick-ins that week. But a lot of those defenders really are relying on kick-ins and you want the ones that are kicking the ball in. So, yeah, long story. I think that I will be looking at bringing Daniel in if he gets too low. But with a week out coming off of 24, if you haven't used too many trades, that's a pretty good opportunity to get him out. And there's some other defenders this week that still look pretty juicy. If you had him, would you be trading him?
No, I don't think I would be. The 1 week off certainly is a little bit of a push to get people to cut their losses. But I think we often hold for 1 to 2 week injuries. So assuming that he will bounce back, which we are because we're looking at him as a potential trade-in target. No, I wouldn't be looking at moving him out. Just a quick note on the kick-in data for the Bulldogs. So they only had 6 kick-ins on the weekend. Caleb Daniel did 2, Bailey Dale 2, Alex Keith 1, Taylor Dereer 1. I think the biggest call-out isn't necessarily that Caleb won't continue to get the kick-ins. I think it might be a little bit affected, but he still looks like the main distributor from a kick-in point of view. I think it's more just that there are now more options for moving the ball quickly out of the back line. So even in play transition, I'm noticing Dale and Dereer getting a little bit more of just the handball receives further up the ground, which is a reason why you might think, can Caleb get back to those heights? I think the main problem is if you trade him out now, you're trading him at a low. You're either going to have to find money to upgrade him to a true premium. So you're spending a trade and cash generation to move from a premium to a better premium, which you generally just don't have the capacity to do across the season. Or you are taking another risk on a cheaper player again, and there's a chance that they are not true premiums by the end of the season. And probably takes us to the next question from Jesse Turner. Is Daniel to CJ worth it to avoid a donut? And I guess with CJ and probably Impey being two guys who they're still about 360, I think, is Impey. CJ might be a little bit more now, but
399.
Because they've continued to pump out premium scores. There's a lot of people looking to them going, Daniel's looking like a bust. Let's pick up a couple of players that potentially could be full premium here and I get cash out of it. And that's the part where, based on what we've seen in the past, it is very rare that when you have a player who's played less than 20 games like CJ break out for the first 4 games of the season, that translating into a definitive premium status for the rest of the year. Sometimes it happens with Ridley last year, for example, but more often than not, that's a fairly large risk. And similarly with Caleb Daniel, I guess, if you're trading him out, you're taking a risk that you paid for him, assuming he's going to be a premium, and now you're almost committing to him staying at an 80 average. Even if he averages 90 from here on out, do you just hold and then use him as your last trade if you're in a luxury situation? It just feels like a lot of risk trying to manufacture one of these side swaps, because you're counting on the player that you're trading out no longer being a premium, even though you bought them in being one, and then you're counting on the mid price of being able to keep up that same slack for the rest of the year. And sometimes it works out, but I have question marks about that. What do you think about the suggestion, Mark? Daniel to CJ or Daniel to Impey? We tend to look at reversion to the mean when giving advice. So we do have a tendency to potentially, I guess, underestimate the potential return from a trade like this.
Yeah. In the conversation, would you be trading Daniel if he wasn't suspended this week? I think not many people would, especially considering, as you say, people have just been making side swaps left, right, and center so far. You just don't have many side swaps. Like, traditionally, you've had 2 after round 2, and that's it. Except for last year when we had a heap of bonus trades, and you just haven't been able to do that. And you don't trade 1 week injuries, right? Come round 17, if your player's out for a week, there's no way that you're trading them. Even if they're out for 3, you're keeping them. Maybe it shouldn't be as big a factor as it seems, and people probably take those missing games in early in the season, give them too much weight. CJ, I think that your analysis is pretty right on, mate. It's a pretty risky move. And I think that people are thinking of Ridley, like you brought up Ridley at last year, that he broke out and then people picked him up in that 380 sort of bracket and he just kept breaking out and he just kept going and going. Is CJ that guy? It's a pretty out-of-the-box suggestion to think that he will be able to keep it going for the year. And so it's a very, very high-risk move. I think that people are probably underestimating how much high risk is in that. And you only get 60K now. It's hard to recommend that. If you're avoiding a donut, it's also hard to stop someone from trading. Like, I think that there's probably times where it's best to swallow donuts earlier in the year, but it's very, very hard to do it when it's your team. So I can understand people wanting to trade. I would probably be reluctant to bring in CJ for Daniel at this stage. I think that you're relying too heavily on, is it 4 games worth of information?
I think you would probably look to just try and fix up your rookie scenario if you were faced with a donut like that. Chapman obviously last week, but Lockie Jones maybe going a week early on him this week if he continues to be named. I guess the other thing to note just with the Hawthorn backs is that CJ is getting a lot of points from intercept marks and in-play statistics, but he doesn't have that same share of kick-ins that we were looking for some of the other players. So Hawthorn's kick-in counts went to Hartley 7, Scrimshaw 4, Hardwick 4, and then Jarman Impey won. So CJ did none of the kick outs, which means that he doesn't have like a baseline free stats to rely off. He does have to keep this play up in game. And I guess probably similar feedback on Jarman Impey as well. I think we got a comment on one of our YouTube videos saying, bet you feel silly about coming versus CJ 1 week through. And to a degree, I mean, CJ has certainly continued to perform really well, but Cummings as well still managed a pretty decent score, I think, in the 80s. But in the interim,
I think he's doing 90% of their kickouts, which is exactly what you're saying. That's such a great baseline.
So it's definitely something to just keep in mind with CJ and Impey. Outside of the Caleb Daniel move, let's say you had Fantasia or you had Clark, or you had a different scenario where you were potentially looking to upgrade, you know, had a bit of cash in bank, finally go, all right, I'm sick of Dow. Let's turn him into a potential premium. Is it too late to jump on CJ or Impey? We have a question from Peter Holmes, one of our Patreons. Would you consider bringing them in, not necessarily as a side swap or a downgrade from a premium, but just a side swap of another mid-pricer or an upgrade of a rookie?
Look, I mean, you've got the Ridley thing again, right? The Ridley thing worked last year. If you had made any move to Ridley last year, it would have worked out. Last year, I think that I probably thought I was too late, but then jumped on Ridley anyway because my FOMO was too high and it worked out brilliantly. I think that more often than not, that doesn't work out brilliantly and it is too late. Impey becomes potentially considerable because of the Butters, Heaney, and not many great options situation. I think that the defense is a little bit trickier. So CJ's doing really well at 400, but there's a lot of defenders that are doing really well this year. So the bar is a lot higher in defense. And CJ's in that bar at the moment, what he's like, eighth best defender so far, but he's had a brilliant start. Like, you don't imagine him doing better than that over the course of the year. And there's a whole bunch of other defenders that just lining up to do better than him. Yeah, I think that they're really different situations, and forward mid-pricer late makes more sense than a defensive mid-pricer late.
So in the Butters Heaney situation from before, compared to some of the more questionable types for the price point, Toby Green, Dane Zorko, would you still take them, or would you potentially explore going down to Impey, banking the cash? I know in AFL Fantasy, for coaches that play both, that's a very tempting option because obviously they get trades every week.
It makes more sense in the forward line than defense, and I would definitely consider an Impey up forward. I think he comes with a lot of injury risk, and I think he's overperforming so far.
Impey over Zorko or Green?
And that's team dependent. So that depends on cash situation. So not everyone's going to be able to do the others. I'd probably prefer to bring in a premium at this stage. I think that Impey at 200 was awesome. At 300 was okay. At 360 or whatever he is now is less okay. He has to become a premium at that price.
Yeah. I agree, man. Conversations get difficult when you turn down a mid-price and then they continue good form, doesn't it, Mark? I feel like, how many more times will we have to revisit this?
I had a chance to do Degoe to Impey and definitely regretting not doing that.
All right, Mark, let's talk about one last player before the rookies, and that's Jordan Ridley. He's had a lot of chatter with the scoring. I think some of his kickouts were taken by Dyson Heppel, so there's a little small threat there, but he's still managed like 120 points. He's looking like one of those must-have players based on his profile, his scoring, his kick-ins. And so I guess, yeah, his name's percolating around as a guy that should we be aggressively trying to trade him in. You know, I brought in Tom Mitchell last week because I went, all right, midfield premium versus backline premium, I'll pay up in the midfield, and I could have got more points if I went with Ridley, apparently. How important do you see Ridley?
I don't see him averaging 133 for the rest of the year. I mean, at his price, it's hard for him to disappear from out of like reach from here. So he's already 614. He would have to average absolute elite premium midfield numbers from here to get up to that 700K where he becomes really difficult to bring in. So he's starting to get to a price where he becomes more reasonably priced. Even though he's averaging 133, it seems unlikely he could do that for the rest of the year. There were games in the back half of last year where it happened to Nick Haynes and Ridley where teams sort of worked them out a little bit and just kept the ball away from them as much as possible. I think it'd be a huge outlier to see a defender average 130 for the season. So if he comes back to 120, then he's getting to be about reasonably priced. I wouldn't be doing everything I can to bring him in, put it that way. Like, I think that last week was a decent chance to bring him in. This week he's probably not a priority. We are in a trading game where you're looking for value, and Ridley doesn't seem to present a heap of value at his current price. Do you, having not brought him in, are you probably, from the tone of your voice, seem to be having a little bit of FOMO? Are your thoughts similar, or are you really looking to find a way to bring him in this week?
No, I think it's this time of year, typically, we're talking about not trading, right? So there's a lot on the run sheet because of injuries and things like that. And otherwise, we're mostly talking about players just to soothe nerves a little bit. And it's not to say that they're not good trade-in options now. It's just that what do you have to do to get those players in? So none of your rookies really have reached a point where you're that happy cashing them in. The ones that have done the best probably still have room to grow because they're your best rookies. So people are asking, can we trade Errol Goulden now? He's at 300K. He just scored a 68. Based on his scoring history, you'd much prefer get rid of Goulden closer to 400, right? You need a bit more time to let some of that stuff mature. Your crap rookies, the poor ones, a lot, are still languishing under 200K. James Rowe is at 173. Tyler Brockman is at 170. Even Jordan is at 200. So you'd hope Jordan gets up to 300 with a good patch rather than trading him out at a low offer 24 after only two price movements. So what situation can you really bring in a must-have player at this stage? Because we're not in upgrade season yet. So I think that's the hardest part is, yeah, I'd like to get him in, but at what expense? And currently, to your point, his price point means he has to average 120, basically, because that was Lloyd's starting price, and he averaged 122 last year. He's basically at Lloyd's price now, right? So he's got to average 120, and you're still not getting burnt if you're trading into him late because you're just getting fair value at that point. I'd much prefer actually pick up the Max Gore and then hope for a captaincy option in the 160 mark if I was going to use that sort of cash. You know, I went with Tom Mitchell over Ridley last round. Probably still pick a midfield option over a defender at this stage, just on the hope that from a consistency point of view that I have a safer bet with Tom Mitchell at the same price point and I'll wait for Ridley or try and get him down the line once I get into a proper upgrade cadence. And I guess if they're injured premiums down the line, generally those are the good opportunities to do a side swap and top up to bring in the true premiums. But just find it tough to be creating a situation where I could even bring him in this week.
I think that's a pretty good summation, mate. I could see if you had cash in the bank and you were dead set on getting rid of Daniel. Daniel to Ridley is not horrible, but yeah, he doesn't present a heap of value at his current price.
All right, let's finish up the podcast talking about downgrade options. This question is from Daniel Maserotti, one of our Patreons. He is looking at potentially going early on Lockie Jones. Is that a safe option? And is Waterman, Alec Waterman, a must-have for a non-playing rookie like Bergman? So they're probably the two main rookies to look at this week, Alec Waterman or going early on Lockie Jones. There's also Devin Robertson, Luke Parks on the bubble, but Robertson's 170, although he is a mid forward. Parks 102K backline player, but Lockie Jones and Alec certainly stand out. What are your assessment on these rookies? I mean, you did a side swap last week to bring Chapman in. Do you see either of these two candidates being, a suitable side swap target?
Yeah, I do actually. Probably both of them. With Jones, you can wait a week unless you're facing a donut this week. Waterman, I do think, is a good target. And as a side swap, really, like you said, none of these guys that are playing are really ready to be traded out. So I think you're really forcing something there to try and get an upgrade that's just probably too early. Waterman, the price point, his age, the fact that he's been playing well, the fact that he's kicking is unreal. They are all good factors that mean he's probably a pretty good in this week. I've definitely thought about it, but if I brought him in, I'd probably have to play him on field. I'm not totally confident about that. But I think that at 130,000, you'd be a little bit more iffy, but 100,000, yeah, I do think that Alec Waterman's a good pick this week. Yeah, just not forcing it. And Lockie Jones, so hugely rated in the preseason. Like you said, he doesn't look like an 18, 19-year-old. And going early is just the tricky bit. Would you go early on Jones?
I don't think so unless I was presented with a donut, but otherwise, why not wait a week? I even though he looks really good, Port also a really developed side and he was held out of the team because of competition for spots. So I don't think that goes away, but based on the defensive efforts and the body he showed and the willingness for a contest, awesome run out of the back line at one stage with a loose ball, outran his opponent with a tap on, got a ball that he was actually probably a 30% on based on positioning on field and rebounded with it effectively. Like they're just little nuggets that make me think, like, if as a coach, if I saw that, I'd want to run him in again. But they've got competition for spots. So if you can, why not wait to make sure he locks his third game in before bringing him in? It's just more consideration to cash generation and trying to make sure you minimize the amount of stalled rookies on field, especially in the back line, Cozzy and Highmore. We don't really want any more non-playing players. And from that point of view, I think Chapman is certainly more secure than Jones was last week. I do think Chapman, like, he couldn't pick him up a week late just because he started off expensive at 148. I don't know I'd pay 200 for him. If you were going to do that, you almost rather just prefer do like an Impey type. Obviously, it's still a fair bit more, but just that 200K for a rookie is not ideal.
My experience bringing in rookies after a price movement has been very poor. If they're really exceptional, sometimes it works, but more often than not, it doesn't. I mean, you just don't quite get the price generation that you need from that player. And yeah, 200K rookies are not really players you're looking for, which probably rules out Devin Robertson, even though he had a really good first game. It's interesting. Jones, like someone like Clark to Jones next week could be very tempting for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, Waterman, like a downgrade to him is interesting as well. So people who have Warner will want to keep him longer. James Rowe is at 170. He's probably too early to be trading him out. Fullerton, I guess, doesn't look like he has great scoring potential, so you might look at him at 160, but you're getting very little for these downgrades, right? Who are you looking to trade out for Waterman, Mark?
That was my first point, right? But I guess it depends what you're going to do with the money, so I can imagine some situations where you might have Butters and need some extra cash to get to, say, Dunkley or something. It's super, super aggressive. It's probably an overuse of a trade, and you'll probably regret that later in the year, but I can see why some people might push those sort of scenarios.
So if you weren't using that cash to upgrade this week, all you were doing is, I guess, some early cash generation to feed into your first upgrade, you wouldn't necessarily look at Fullerton down to Waterman banking 60K and trying to use him to ramp up in cash.
That's a tricky one. I've got Fullerton. And he had that one week where McInerney wasn't playing and had the solo ruck situation, and he actually looked pretty good, but got completely crushed by Grundy. And even with the number one ruck roll, scored 40 points. I know that the Lions have got McStay to come back, and that may or should probably push him out of the side pretty quickly. So Fullerton may be a bit of a unique situation that not many other rookies are like that. But if he's still playing, he might post a decent score. McInerney could get injured again. Things can turn very quickly with a Fullerton. I'd be pretty reluctant to do that at this stage. It's just you'd be hoping a lot from Waterman. And Waterman, as a forward, has looked really good. But he is a forward playing for the Bombers, and the Bombers are probably going to struggle this year, and so he's probably going to have some games where he doesn't get a lot of the ball. If it was a midfielder or someone playing up the ground a bit more that's likely to have a higher basement, I'd be more inclined to do it. These 102K rookies generally work out really, really well if they keep getting games. But yeah, I won't be selling the farm to bring in Warden this week.
I don't think he's a must-have either, so it depends a little bit on your potential trade-out options. But he's certainly the top target for a downgrade this week. All right, we've spent enough on that. We've got to allocate a bit of time on for the Patreon show, Mark. So we might leave Chris Burgess for our Patreon special. Any final sign-offs for our main show, Mark?
No, realistically, your position this week should be don't trade, I guess. If you can find a way to not trade this week, that's probably a good decision.
And I guess to echo that, generally the way you catch up to the competition is trying to find an alternate way to scramble back up in points. It's not to follow into the herd 1 week late. It's trying to have some ability to differentiate short-term patterns from more medium, longer-term trends and trying to find different opportunities that other people may be overlooking, because the tendency is everyone looks toward the highest averaging players at the start. That's another thing to keep in mind. The FOMO can turn pretty quickly as well, and you certainly don't want to be trading into something late if you don't see a sustainable run moving forward. If you do, then this is probably the last week that you can act on some of those final FOMO trades, but it's certainly generally a riskier move that we don't always recommend. And with that, we wish you all the best on sitting on your hands for another week. And next week, Mark, you're heading on some travels?
Yeah, I am. I should be on the second leg by next Monday. We've moved out of our house, finished that yesterday, as you can see from the background. Just some temporary accommodation for a week, and off in the van on Saturday for the next couple of years.
Very exciting, mate. So we'll keep in touch and see how we go connecting up for shows. But on behalf of the community, enjoy your kickoff on Saturday and wishing you all the best. Catch you, listeners. See you next week.
Yeah.
Let's get crazy.